Welcome, everybody. Thank you for coming to the Professional Knowledge and Attitudes in Healthcare session put together by the Medical Care section. We have four thought-provoking presentations today on strategies for increasing and tracking professional knowledge in order to improve the health of Latino and urban populations. We're going to have each of our presenters go for about 15 minutes, and we'll reserve the questions and answers to the end just to make sure everybody gets their time. So our first presenter today, Dr. Scott Frank from Case Western Reserve, and go ahead. You can use the keyboard just to answer the mouse.
Hello, I am Scott Frank. I am a family physician, public health practitioner, and public health educator. I am the director of the Master of Public Health program at Case Western Reserve University School of Medicine, and I also am the director of the Shaker Heights Health Department, a small municipal health department in Cuyahoga County. I also am the curriculum leader for population health in the School of Medicine, and today I'm going to share with you our experience with the extensive care unit. The extensive care unit, as maybe intuitively obvious, is poised to contrast with the intensive care unit, where physicians and medical students look in an increasingly narrow fashion with the extensive care unit. Rather than looking with a microscope, we look with a macroscope. A microscope can see things that are infinitely small. A macroscope can see things that are infinitely complex. The extensive care unit is intended to do that. Before I go further, I will just mention my informal attire today is in honor of Halloween. My kids gave me this t-shirt about 15 years ago. I have five kids, and it says, "Be Frank," and of course my last name is Frank, and little Frankenstein. So I wear it every Halloween, and in honor of my kids, here it is today too. So the population health block and the case curriculum comes during the first 5 weeks of medical education to reflect its foundational nature. It is a problem-based learning format with 20 separate inquiry groups learning from cases during two-hour sessions three times a week, in addition to content surrounding those small group sessions. These are the goals. I'm not going to go through them in detail, but the slides will be available if you'd like to look at them later. The themes I will comment on during the first week, we focus on population health, and our case is a pandemic flu case. We do a tabletop exercise, which actually was published in an article in American Journal of Preventive Medicine this month. I have a patient panel revolving around that tabletop exercise. The second week, the theme is preventive medicine. The case starts as a well adult case, but soon complicated by an undiagnosed alcoholism. We do patient panels each of the weeks. The next is individual and population management of chronic illness. We do a diabetes case with an Hispanic patient, and we bring in a shared medical appointment group to demonstrate that newer approach to patient care and chronic illness management during that week. The next week is health inequality, and we focus on sexually transmitted infections, and we bring in an HIV caregiver panel. And the last week is medical systems error with a wrong site surgery case. In addition, we have a summer reading that the students are required. Their first day of class, they have book discussion groups. We do a health promotion challenge. Every medical student is given a pedometer, and they are invited to join a 10,000-step challenge. They compete as individuals, as small IQ groups, and in the four societies that exist within our medical school. We build in a quality improvement session mid-block, and that helps them improve their performance in the 10,000-step challenge and teaches them a little bit about quality improvement. And then we do the extensive care unit. The extensive care unit is an experiential community-based service learning project intended to introduce medical students to epidemiology, biostatistics, community assessment, health risk behavior, health promotion, and social and environmental determinants of health. Each of the 20 IQ groups is assigned a Cleveland Municipal School District middle or high school. They evaluate the neighborhood surrounding that school through analysis of publicly available data. We have a great portal for that at CASE called NeoCanDo, Northeast Ohio, something, 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 that is a portal for publicly available information for throughout the state of Ohio. We use Ohio Department of Health school report cards that are published, make those available to the students, and the students do an internet search about the neighborhood as well. Semi-structured interviews are conducted with a neighborhood expert, and students do a windshield survey and sometimes a walking tour of the neighborhood as well. They are also expected to look at the issue of food insecurity through the food source checklist. They go into stores in the neighborhood to see what kinds of things are available in a formal, structured fashion. They analyze health risk behavior through a school-level analysis of the Youth Risk Behavior Survey. We've conducted in Cuyahoga County on a yearly basis Youth Risk Behavior Survey since 2002. One year we do middle school, the next year we do high school. And while the Cleveland schools are reported in aggregate, this is the only analysis that focuses on a school-level analysis of the data that is available. Thus, it provides a service to the educators and the school system that allows them to have a better sense of what is going on among the youth within their neighborhood. We have expert facilitators to support the process. The students generate a report that's made available to the schools and the community, and they design and conduct a longitudinal service project that they present generally in January of the next year. Our school year starts mid-July. So these were the ECU neighborhoods in the city of Cleveland. And you can see we have both east side and west side neighborhoods. Cleveland is one of the most geographically segregated cities in the country. The east side is nearly exclusively African American, while the near west side is heavy Hispanic, and the further west side is primarily blue-collar white. We use a structured approach to windshield surveys. These are the kinds of things that are looked at, and again, for the sake of time, I'm not going to go through each of these. I actually just went on such a windshield survey last Friday with another group of students. This is the food source checklist that we use, and we've taken this from the literature, but it gives the students an opportunity to get a real sense of what it is that is available to the population of the neighborhoods that they're evaluating. Publicly available data includes race, education, poverty rate, percentage of female-headed households, crime rates, youth delinquency, and the way the NeoCanDo website is set up, it allows a comparison between the neighborhood, the city of Cleveland, and the rest of Cuyahoga County. It also allows us to drill down to the level of census tracts, and one of the really important teaching points is that not just within a city, but even within a neighborhood within a city, there are often areas that are more disadvantaged than other areas, and identifying within that within a neighborhood helps students begin to understand how we can target areas of the community for greater intervention. So this is an example of a map of the Lee Miles neighborhood. This is families above the poverty level in this case. You can see one of the census tracts in that neighborhood has much lower levels of families that are above the poverty level. This is looking at household demographics in the central neighborhood, and you can see that nearly 60% of people in this neighborhood have a household income of less than $10,000. More than 75%, actually close to 80%, have an income less than $20,000 in this neighborhood. Again, the central neighborhood, less than high school education, 45%, only 2.5% have college education in the central neighborhood. You can see the comparisons between Cleveland and the rest of Cuyahoga County as you see what goes on in central. Again, in the central neighborhood, 88% of households are headed by single mothers. This is one of the most difficult barriers that we need to work with, or issues that we need to work with, in order to be useful or helpful to people in the neighborhood, is recognizing the centrality of that issue and the multiple different impacts that result because of it. So within the Youth Risk Behavior Survey, we are able to look at demographics, able to look at health variables, able to look at pro-health and pro-safety behaviors, at substance abuse variables, at sexual history, violence, mental health, and we again are able to compare all of these findings to Cleveland, Cuyahoga County, the state, and the nation. Middle school, we can't compare to the nation because there isn't a national middle school youth risk behavior survey, but middle school is, of course, a key age to address these issues among children. So you can see some of the issues that were addressed in the Lee Miles neighborhood here. 95% of kids in that neighborhood did not or do not use bike helmets. With 55, and this is middle school students, 55% lifetime sexual use, sexual intercourse, near 28%, nearly one out of five students report contemplating suicide, marijuana use and cigarette use are there as well. And you can see again how these things compare to the rest of Cuyahoga County. So nearly 40% of middle schoolers in the Lee Miles neighborhood had tried cigarettes, whereas in the rest of the county it was only 21% in my city of Shaker Heights, where I'm the health director, and we have a drug-free community grant and have had model programs in place for a number of years. You can again see where we stand compared to Lee Miles, and the reason this comparison is placed is because Lee Miles borders Shaker Heights, so across the border. Through the Youth Risk Behavior Survey.
The students are actually asking kids in the...
No, I'm sorry. The Youth Risk Behavior Survey is gathered by the Prevention Research Center for Healthy Neighborhoods on a yearly basis and has been since 2002. The students are given the database from those neighborhoods. Sorry, those are some of the interesting figures that I should have been showing you as we went along. This is another look at the Youth Risk Behavior Survey. This was another way that a group of students presented it, and this was the central neighborhood again, and they compared their rates to Cuyahoga County, and here I'll use the circles. if you look at sexual intercourse, ever lifetime sexual intercourse was about 35% in Central, much higher than Cuyahoga County, but importantly, condom use at less sexual intercourse was very low for Central. So the blue is Central. You can see in Cuyahoga County the reported use of condoms was about 75% and less than 25% in the central neighborhood. These are the kinds of connections that students can make about neighborhoods that demonstrate there are areas of higher risk than other areas, and making the connections back to those social determinants of health is one of the key issues that we manage with the project. So we also do some tests of association. Students are asked to pose questions, research questions, and investigate those with the help of our expert facilitators. These are just some of the findings. The first one was marijuana use and gender. The next is the relationship between alcohol use, and these are tests of association and cross-sectional data. That point is clearly made to the students, but you can see the difference in alcohol use and sexual activity, and the correlation between or the relationship between alcohol use and suicidal ideation. The students also are required to decide based on the information they have gathered what they will do for a community service project, and they conduct that over the next number of months. You can see these are the areas that were suggested, or selected, I should say, during 1 year of the project. It is somewhat easier to focus on nutrition and fitness, and certainly those issues are there in these neighborhoods, so most students chose that. Some took on what I would consider more difficult tasks, such as mental health, alcohol, tobacco, and violence. One group did a project that wasn't related to the youth in the community. In my last slide, I'll just share some of the lessons that were reported to be learned by one of the groups through their community service project. They did a jump rope project, Jump the Day Away, and they stated that they learned how to use statistical tools to analyze data, that they learned how to interpret the conclusions to gain insight into the community, that they were able to integrate statistical evidence with community member advice to better understand the community's obstacles to healthy lifestyles, how to work with a community organization to stage an intervention that addresses a problem in a way that is aligned with community values, how to communicate information in a way that's appropriate for the audience and effective in motivating healthy behavior, and that everybody enjoys jumping ropes, even medical students. If I had written that myself, I couldn't have asked for a better stated outcome from the students, but I didn't, in fact, write that myself. They did. So thank you for your attention, and happy to answer questions later.